Welcome to the Scale Savvy Podcast with your host, Aaron Matthew. Dive into the journeys of business owners scaling their dreams into reality. We're talking big wins, real challenges, and the raw truths of growing a great company. Whether you're pushing to the next level or plotting your course, Scale Savvy is your go-to for all things growth. Fasten your seatbelts. It's time to get savvy, get inspired, and get scaling. Here's Aaron.
Welcome, savvy entrepreneurs, to the Scale Savvy Podcast, where we dive in deep into the roller coaster that it is to scale a business. I'm your host, Aaron Matthey, and each week we're here unraveling the mysteries and sharing the victories and tackling the challenges that come with taking your business to a new height. So on the show, we're not just talking about just the success stories, but we do like to talk about those real challenges that we know that we're facing, that our guests are facing, we know that you're facing too. So we'd love to lean in and dissect those and learn more about this journey that it takes to scale. Today, I'm super excited to have with us Alex Coring from Sidewalk Safety. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
We've been chatting for quite a while. I've known Alex for, I think, about a year and a half, and it's been fun to hear more about his entrepreneurial journey. But can you give us just your quick intro on what Sidewalk Safety is and what you do?
We're a pavement and concrete asset management company based out of Sacramento, California, and we've been in business for 7 years. I took over the company or started working with the company 7 years ago with my father-in-law had started the business. So he was in business for about 20 years, pretty much had a steady state of revenue for that 20 years. I went back through his records when I started with him. Literally, brother-in-law had a business in Dallas that was similar and was doing about 6x in terms of revenue because he had had employees, whereas my father-in-law was a sole proprietor and kind of a one-man show. We called, the man in the machine, grinding concrete trip hazards. And he's Italian, so we called him the grind father. That was his his nickname. But yeah, he's really into the Godfather too. But I started working with him 7 years ago. I had was working in corporate America in medical device sales for, one of the largest medical device manufacturers in the world. Been in that, put an 18-year career in that industry. And I always wanted to own my own business, but really had no idea how to transition out of corporate America, what I wanted to do. And when we had a meeting with my father-in-law's brother-in-law, saw the scale of his operation and what's possible, I said, hey, Gary, let me come in and help you with my business knowledge to scale and grow your business so that you can retire. He was 63 at the time, and he was out, 3-4 days a week and sometimes 90, 100 degree weather in California with a respirator on, with a cloud of concrete dust flying around him, grinding. It's time for you to scale back what you're doing from a physical standpoint, and let's put some mental horsepower behind your business instead of just putting the physical effort in. So that's how
that's so interesting. I always think it's fascinating to hear how people end up in the places where they are, because I'm sure this was not the original plan, but I love that you're able to jump in and apply it. Knowledge from one industry into another. And I think that's so fascinating because so much of business is the same regardless of what industry you're in, right? The sales techniques carry over so well. And a lot of just those different pieces, I'm sure that you carried over from device sales into Sidewalk Safety. So that's exciting. Tell me a little bit about what were some of the biggest challenges that you faced? Because that was a big shift, right? To go from working corporate America to starting your own business or taking over an existing business and trying to grow it to scale. What were some of those early roadblocks that you faced and how did you overcome those?
Just from a business standpoint, right? Not having owned my own business or run it, or I'm not an accountant, I'm not a marketing person. I knew the sales aspect of marketing, but when it came to putting the collateral together, building websites, doing SEO campaigns, Google ads, those aren't the type of things that you do when working for a corporation. They have their own internal teams. So I saw what excellence looks like, but I'd never actually, performed that myself. Part of the challenges in putting the company together is, I would say, not having a mentor, right? Early from the beginning, somebody that's gone through the paces that knows how to set up a business and can help and train, because you can fast track your success more efficiently and easily when you have someone else to lean on that can help you out. It's just hiring your first employee can be a challenge. When do you have enough revenue? You're doing some of the work yourself and you want to grow beyond that. There's a pretty common saying in business, I'm sure you've heard, you want to work on your business, not in your business. Right. As an owner, you have to put a dollar value on your time. Say your time is worth $100 or $200 an hour. Those are the type of activities that you should be doing, there's invariably pieces and components of a business when starting it up that are something you could pay a VA for, right? You know, 10, yeah. 15, 20 bucks an hour, but you're doing those activities because you don't have somebody to take care of those. So really optimizing your business, getting help, distributing the workload with employees that get the job done. And, you know, my first step was hiring an operations manager. We're a family business, so I hired my mother-in-law. Ended up working out great. She's doing a great job. But so that was employee number one. And then hiring our first field worker was a bit of a challenge. I mean, I remember changing our scope of work. So we were doing concrete grinding and then said, okay, let's tear out sidewalks and replace them. So we started pouring concrete, but we didn't have anyone on the team that knew how to do that. And it was like, we'd go out and get a sell and market a job. Okay, we close the deal, but we don't have any employees to fulfill that. And I remember going to like Home Depot and picking up, you know, guys out of the parking lot and just, hey, yeah. Does anyone have any concrete experience? You kind of just wing it. You know, everyone says fake it till you make it or whatever. That's a popular saying. But, you know, you really have to fly by the seat of your pants and make adjustments when you're growing. It's kind of the chicken and the egg scenario, right? Like, do you put the employee in place before you have the work? Well, then you have that cost. And that person's not working because you don't have the job, but you can't get the job without the employee. How do those pieces come into play, right?
Yeah, that can be a challenge with those chicken and the egg things. I want to dive in a little deeper into a couple of things that you mentioned. So one thing that you mentioned was this idea that of hiring a coach to help you or a contractor to come in and help set up some of those things. I think sometimes as entrepreneurs, we get stuck in this idea of thinking that we are supposed to be the masters at all areas of the business and that it's not okay if we're not the best at marketing, or it's not okay if we're not the best at managing the financials or the operations or, you know, whatever the area of struggle is that we're facing with. And I think it's so smart to look at how do we bring in a coach or how do we bring in a consultant who can help get this stuff set up and then show us how to maintain it. I think that that is so critical. I also love what you're talking about with hiring employees. I think everybody faces that, right? When you're like, okay, we're really busy, which is awesome, but now we need help. But then if we hire help, we won't be busy anymore. And trying to figure out where that balance is. And so one thing that I highly recommend that people do is to plan ahead for what all of the training and knowing what it is that you're going to have somebody do before you get to that, oh man, we are so busy, we have got to hire someone, so that you don't feel that pinch. It helps with that transition a little bit. So I know that you guys are rocking it and, you know, with growth, and you've got a lot of different projects that you are working on. Can you share with us a little bit about your current goals and projects that you're doing?
So yeah, we started out doing kind of smaller projects. I think our average job size was about $1,200. And now we've scaled up to do projects in the scope of, like, you know, $300,000 to $700,000, you know, for some of the bigger projects. That's kind of what I've been focusing on is larger scale site work where we come in and I can leverage some of the relationships I've built over the years to scale and grow the business. And we don't necessarily have to do all of the work, but we go out and sell and market the job. You know, for instance, constructing parking lots or doing, we just finished a project for Hilton where we did ADA upgrades for the entire building, $40 million renovation project. And as part of it, they had inspections of all their sidewalks and access ramps into the buildings, and they were out of code. So we fixed all those for them. Projects that interest me more, right? They're more cerebral. You get blueprints and plans. And then when you get the project, you're on it for 2, 3, 4, sometimes 6, 8, 12 weeks. And then that gives you some breathing room to work on the next big project. It's awesome. Not, yeah, you don't have as many turns, right? You're not like find work for next week. You're trying to find work for next month or 2 months down the road. So
I love that. Was there kind of a gut check the first time you said, you know what, we're going to move from this $1,200 average job price to a $300,000 job price? What was the gut check like for you in that moment?
Yeah. So I think for anybody starting out, this is just a great piece of advice. And this is the way I think about things and train is like when we're learning as a child, right? You learn your ABCs, you learn the alphabet first, and then you figure out how to string those letters together to make words. And then you figure out how to string the words together to make sentences, and then sentences make paragraphs and whatever. And you can make a cohesive thought from something as simple as 26 letters. So in any business, there are fundamentals. There are building blocks. And it might be accounting, it might be marketing, it might be cold calling, it might be performing a certain task. But if we understand those building blocks as an individual component, it doesn't matter how big you go, you just keep stacking things on, right? Like you're building words, you're building paragraphs, you're building essays. You get what I'm saying, right? Like,
yeah,
having a really good fundamental understanding of the building blocks and foundation of a business, whether it's a $10,000 project or a $1 million project, the building blocks just get bigger. But if you understand them, you can scale them. And so that's what really what I focused on was in the business was, okay, can we go out and do concrete? Great. Do we understand all of the codes? Apply our skills on the concrete to looking at blueprints and plans and go out and do some site work projects where using GPS and, you know, using lasers to get elevations and things like that. So understanding those pieces and pulling them all together makes for a more interesting business, I think.
Awesome. I agree. Yeah, I think it's taking that leap, I think, is a little scary at first, but I think you're so right. People have more of the building blocks in place than they realize to be able to do that big growth. In the pre-show, you mentioned we were talking about current challenges, and you were talking how one of the things that you're looking at as you're growing right now is how to get those operational costs under control.
Yeah.
And so a couple of things that you had mentioned as we were talking about those operational costs are things like optimizing a sales force, because it's expensive to go out and do those bids. And so making sure that you're getting the most out of your time there. And then you talked about some challenges with geography, where you guys carry, you know, cover a large area, and how I'm sure that plays into not only the fulfillment costs of getting all your guys there and all the equipment there, but also into trying to bid on that larger scale. Can you tell us a little bit more about what those operational cost margin struggles are looking like for you?
It's really important to do, like, have your regular bookkeeping done so that you're not waiting till the end of the quarter to kind of figure out where you guys might have gone wrong. Budgeting for a business. I don't do a lot of budgeting because my business is like up and down. Some months I'll be like 200 grand in the black, and the next month I'm like 150 in the red, and it's just like up and down based on my net terms. You know, we're net 30, and sometimes we have quite a few late payers. And so managing the material costs and all of those different things that come into play is, you know, really having a good understanding of your bookkeeping and where your costs are going on a weekly or quarterly basis.
Yeah. I think one of the things I hear from businesses that are in your spot is the transition from the regular bookkeeping to working with a chief financial officer, even if it's on a fractional basis, to really dive in on more of that budgeting, but also to look at job costing. Are you guys currently doing job costing and looking at the profitability of each individual job?
In the beginning, when we do a takeoff, so we get a scope of work for a project, and then we kind of assess how much is going to be into the job, right? And then we set hey, we need to make a 40% margin on this. So that's our final price. But when it comes to like every single project, the amount of time that goes into doing the job costing when you wear like as many hats as I do has been a challenge. So part of that piece that you're asking about, you know, the operational excellence and maintaining good operating margins has been a bit of a challenge for us because of, you know, I'm the guy that does all the finance, but I also do, I'm the guy that does everything, right?
Right. So, we like to call that the CEO or the chief everything officer.
Yeah. Yeah. So the larger projects. So if we have something like 100 grand or, you know, 50 to 100 or bigger, those projects are worth investing the time into to do job costing. We use Xero for accounting, and they have project management within that program that helps us reconcile all of our bank transactions and appropriate it to the right project. You know, QuickBooks Workforce that does reporting and overtime reports and can get payroll. So we kind of stack material and expenditure costs with payroll costs. And that kind of gives you a rough estimate, but it doesn't, there's a lot of hidden costs that go into running a project. Like my operations manager, did I account for her time? And I don't know what percent of her payroll went into that project, and how many trips did I need to go down back and forth to
yep.
to the site? How many emails did I write, and how many phone calls did I take from the civil engineer and the irrigation and landscaping team? And like all of those hidden costs where you're at the end of the project, say like, well, how much did I really make per hour on that? And those are hard things to track, I think.
Yeah, I've seen it is complicated. I agree. But I think that's where it's worth having some discussions with some chief financial officers that can help actually put the process together to track all of that. Because it does take quite a bit of process work to be able to say, hey, guys, when you're getting receipts, here's how you allocate it to the specific job. And here's how we track the, here's how we divvy up the overhead of the management team and how that goes into the job. So I think it would be definitely be worth a discussion on that. Another thing that you mentioned in our call before was optimizing the sales force. When they're traveling, you've got a big area that you cover. If somebody's driving out 3 hours to do a job, you got to make sure that it's going to be a profitable job, right? It's worth driving out there to do a $300,000 job, but not so much for a $1,200 job. So I'm curious a little bit about that. Tell me about how you're screening calls prior to sending somebody out to bid.
Property management companies, like I would say 80% of our business is repeat business, 33% close rate when it comes to 3 out of 30, 33 out of 100 jobs that we quote come in, but 57% of the revenue that we quote. We're closing bigger deals and losing the smaller deals. It's like if you go to Vegas and you're gambling, right? You play a $5 hand and you do that 5 times, but then you put down $100 and who cares if you lost all the $5 hands, you won the $100 hand. So that's kind of what we focus on. As far as screening the calls go, our business model, we could be working for a property management company that has 15 properties and they're one of our best clients. They give us four $30,000 or $40,000 deals to redo their parking lot. And then they have a house call, right? So they're like, hey, this tree, like we just had one, a tree just fell over in a storm we just had a couple of days ago. It ripped up the sidewalk. It's a tiny little thing. It's like a, 20 feet of sidewalk, but we have to drop everything to go out and help them because they're one of our best clients and we want to service them so that we know that, okay, hey, we're not maybe going to make money on this project. We're overall with this client, we're looking at the long-term relationship. The other way that we screen jobs, that's not really screening, it's just more like servicing and helping. So we are sometimes reactive instead of proactive about that. But in terms of being proactive, we use a lot of satellite imagery and try and do as much investigative work and like a takeoff, figuring out square footage, how many, we do question how many units is this apartment that we're working on? If it's a 30-unit apartment and it's 2.5 hours away, no, we're not going to go. If it's like a new call in, we utilize a lot of the Google Maps and Street Views and stuff to investigate the client before.
Yeah, it's tricky when you've got those high relationships with the property management companies. That definitely adds some complexity to it. The thing that you mentioned is if you are sending somebody out to bid on those smaller jobs, you mentioned how do you take advantage of that? And as far as prospecting while you're in the area, what do your salespeople typically do?
It depends on the workload, but and the travel distance. So if we're sending somebody out, or at least when I go out to do an estimate, I'm getting on. We use a lot of mapping programs, so we'll get an estimator have an iPad. They go out into the field. They open up a URL on their iPad in a like Google Chrome browser or whatever browser, and it gives them their assignment so they can track from one location to the next where they're supposed to go. So when we go into different geographies, we can then pull up like a secondary map where we do prospecting lists. So we use a thing called Phantom Buster. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of it. It's kind of like a web scraping tool. So it can do social media sites, LinkedIn,
Oh, cool.
Google Maps, whatever. You put in a set of parameters, say you want all the churches within a 10-mile radius of, Sacramento or something. And then you just let it sit overnight and it collates the data and it scrapes Google Maps and then it can go and find any people related to that organization or property. And then it can go find their social media profiles. And then you can do research and background on the people associated with a specific business or location. And then we aggregate that into like an Excel file and upload it into another Google Map, custom Google Map that pinpoints all of the businesses with the pertinent information that an estimator would need to know walking in the front
Wow.
door. You're armed with like the best information about the property. What's the management company? Hey, we might already do business with the management company, but we didn't know that they had a property over here. So being armed with that information to go in makes those people more successful. But the idea is to go out somewhere on assignment, and you go to a certain geography. You might have two or three estimates to do, but the remainder of the time of the day should be spent prospecting in the area through.
Awesome. I love that. Yeah, taking advantage of if you're out there in the area, let's try to hit as many sales as we can, and that'll help with the fulfillment and the travel too. Well, thank you so much for sharing what is it you're working on. One last thing I wanted to mention too is some of the work that you are doing to help other people in your industry. Can you tell us just briefly about that?
Like I mentioned, kind of when we started, one of the biggest challenges was not having help, kind of being out, feeling like you're in the dark growing a business. So I have been asked to partner with Asphalt Kingdom, and they have a coaching program that I've helped develop with them kind of over the last year or so. It started about 2 years ago. We're doing weekly meetings on Wednesdays. The first meeting was me, the owner of Asphalt Kingdom, and three other people. So we had five
Awesome.
people on the original live show, and it's all about camaraderie within the industry, sharing success stories, building everybody up, helping answer questions from young entrepreneurs, helping people get started in the pavement maintenance industry. So that's been our weekly meeting for the last couple of years. And then a year ago, we started an actual coaching program. We do field ride. You can either go into somebody's territory or they can come to us. And we can teach them how to use equipment and or set up a business. My focus is more strategic with who I work with, like business strategy, optimizing your tech stack, utilizing technology to be more efficient and use workflow automations and things like Zapier
Yeah,
to.
that's great. You know, when you're mentioning that too, it brought to mind one of the big challenges with your industry in general is finding qualified workers to come that have some experience. That's a big challenge when it comes to anything in that construction industry right now. One of the ways that I've heard recently that's quite creative and I think would be a great tool for you to consider would be doing ride-alongs with people that are interested in learning how to do the work. What's fun about that is when you bring people on for these ride-alongs, or maybe you hold like a workshop of, hey, here's how to operate these grinders and that kind of stuff. It brings to the surface people that are interested in that work and people that are passionate in that. Because even if they don't have any experience in it, if they've got an interest and a passion to learn how to do it, then sometimes those will end up being your best employees. It'd be interesting to see how you could scale that into more of like a workshop model, even to help people to find new contractors, because that is a big struggle I know in your industry as well. Thank you so much again for joining us. And listeners, I hope that you're feeling inspired and ready to tackle your own scaling adventures. Remember, it's not just about reaching this place where everything operates smoothly and is on this upward trajectory. It's all about up and down and enjoying the journey as we go, and not just the destination, and learning from all of those ups and downs. So thank you so much for being our dedicated listeners, and your support means the world to us. And if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review and share with your fellow entrepreneurs who are on their own scaling quest. Until next time, I'm Erin Matthey, and let's stay savvy and keep scaling.
Thank you for tuning in to the Scale Savvy Podcast, Navigating Small Business Growth. Remember, the path to success is within reach. Stay savvy and keep scaling.